Pentest and cycle modes for real problems in finance and in operations management in many other fields. He's a fellow with the management science engineering and the WE, so he's both in OR, control, machine learning, and a lot of work in design programming. He did his three degrees, all degrees at MIT. I think he's the only one on record that won prizes for all his dissertations. And then he moved to Stanford, where he's currently on faculty. In our community, I'm sure many of you know about his work in dynamic programming, about the approximate linear programming approach to approximate DP, and the TV works that he's going to talk about today. Then I share the same advisor, and just want to tell a little small story about it. So Ben graduated before I came in, and then one day I sat with advisor John Stiglitz and another student, and we had this sort of problem, and John thought, "Oh, Ben would have solved in 2 days." So it took us 5 days. And then from that point on, there was a Ben factor. So what the factor of time it takes to over Ben, and then we have the rate, which is a new unit of work, which is Ben days. So without further ado, thank you. Ben.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. Well, I'm really glad to be here, and this is a wonderful event, so thank you to those who were involved in organizing it. I've been engaged in this line of research for a number of years. You know, I've been involved in other things too, but I've always come back to this to work on it on and off, and I've had a lot of fun with it over the years, and a lot of fun talking to many of the faces I see here again today. But so today I wanted to reflect on some of this experience, and in particular the work that I've been involved with on temporal difference learning. I'm still intrigued and excited about this stuff. Before walking in here, I was talking to Tinder, and who mentioned, "You're still working on this? The rest of the RL world has moved on." But hopefully, when I share some of these thoughts with you, you'll find some of these ideas intriguing and see that there are still issues that haven't been resolved that may be interesting. Okay, so. So I thought, you know, Rich suggested we share some personal history in our talks, and you know, a theme of this talk is trajectories used by temporal difference methods. I thought I'd start by discussing a bit about my trajectory in this area, and it started with Tetris. When I was a junior at MIT as an undergraduate, I had a part-time job in Richard Lippmann's lab at MIT Lincoln Laboratory, and I guess in 1991 or 1992, he came back from a NIPS conference and gave me two papers that he thought were really interesting. One was by Rich on TD methods, and the other was by Jerry on backgammon. And he asked me to take a look at those and see if I could use those ideas to develop a system for playing Tetris. I really enjoyed those papers and felt inspired and found the ideas really elegant. And I wanted to understand them better. So I worked a bit on Tetris. I didn't actually get that working as an undergraduate, but when I started grad school, I decided to try to understand these things better. And I went and learned some dynamic programming and some approximate DP, and took some math courses, partly to work on this. And so I spent a few years studying this stuff, And it was a really exciting time to be working on this at MIT. Partly because there's so many interesting people around there who were interested in this stuff. There was Rich and Andy who were at UMass nearby who I talked to a lot. There was Dimitri and John Sisyklis, who I worked with at MIT, and Satinder was there. Peter Diane was around, and so there's so much activity revolving around this stuff, and it was really fun to talk to all these guys, and I learned a lot from them. Most of these guys are here today, but the one who is not, in case you haven't met him, I thought I should share John Sisyklis' picture here. He's the guy in the middle there. But he was my advisor, and a lot of the things I'll talk about today we worked on together. So over the years since being a grad student, I've been involved. I've continued to be involved in the analysis of this stuff, but also I've been involved in a number of applications. And so I'll talk a little bit about one of the applications today. And in this talk, what I really want to focus on are some insights generated from studying TD that I really think are new to approximate dynamic programming. So approximate dynamic programming, existed, and there are a number of papers on the topic, way before reinforcement learning began as a field. And so what I want to talk about are insights that are new to that field that were generated by studying TD. And also I want to share with you some open issues that might be interesting to work on. Okay, so just to summarize what I'm going to say, there are really a few main points to the talk. And they primarily revolve around trajectory-based sampling. So TD follows trajectories and sample states along trajectories and does updates using those states. And that's a sort of a special feature of the algorithm. And it turns out to be a feature that's important to the algorithm's convergence and a feature that is important to performance, meaning how well you do when you try to actually control a system. Okay. And finally, I want to make a point based on some results that TD is probably not just another heuristic search algorithm. In particular, outside the field of reinforcement learning, people think of TD as being part of this list of heuristic search algorithms. There's policy gradient methods, which have been developed both outside and within the field of reinforcement learning. There's genetic algorithms and colony optimization, simulated annealing, and there's temporal difference methods. It's like a list of sort of methods for exploring to find a reasonably good solution to a problem. Now I think TD is sort of doesn't really belong in this list because there are structural properties of Markov decision problems that TD takes advantage of that really make a big difference. It's not just a search algorithm. Okay, so with some results, I want to formalize that point a little bit. All right, so that's our agenda for the talk. So before I begin, you guys all know about this, but let me just sort of give you some notation for that I'm going to use for value function approximation. Okay, so our goal is going to be to compute a policy for an MDP, to compute an optimal policy, we could go about solving Bellman's equation, which takes that form up there. But because there are too many states, we'll focus on coming up with approximations, and the approximation J tilde Rx, is a function J tilde R mapping state to a scalar value, and this R is the is a vector of parameters for that function. Okay, so for example, J tilde R could be a linear combination of basis functions, and R could be the weights on these basis functions, and that's actually the case we're going to focus on. All right. Also, please feel free to interrupt and make comments or questions or state your objections as I go along. Okay. Yeah, so as I mentioned, we're going to focus on linear approximations, and that's a case where J tilde R is linear in R. You can also think of that as a case where we have fixed basis functions, and we're trying to compute the weights on these to approximate the value function. Okay, so... Yeah, so TD is sort of there are many variations of TD, and so let me share the version of TD I want to think about. And I guess it's many of you would call it SARSA, but the idea is, and this is sort of the TD zero version of that. The idea is, you update the parameters R based on state transitions. And so here's a state X and a state Y, and when we transition from X and Y through after selecting an action U, we experience a reward GXU. And given a current approximation J tilde R, U is selected perhaps as a greedy action with respect to that approximation, or perhaps by adding some exploration to that greedy action, say doing Boltzmann exploration, that gives us an action U, and then and based on the transition we get out of that, we define a temporal difference, which is this quantity here, GX comma U plus alpha J tilde RY, represents our estimate of value starting at X, given what the next state Y is. J tilde Rx represents an estimate of our value starting at X, given only that we're at state X. Okay, and so since the former is a more informative prediction, you take that difference and you try to change the parameters to make J tilde R X closer to GXU plus alpha J tilde R Y. Okay, so I think this is the TD algorithm, TD zero algorithm, and it takes that form there. Okay. Okay, so just to have a counterpoint. I want to describe an algorithm that we'll compare TD against. And the reason for describing this algorithm is, just to highlight what distinguishes TD. And this algorithm I think of as something that would not look so different from prior art to, say, a person of ordinary skill in the art of dynamic programming. Okay, so this is sort of something that would not be unusual before TD came along. Okay, and let's call this algorithm sampled value iteration. Okay, so here's how sample value iteration works. We initialize with a distribution pi over the state space. Okay, the distribution over the state space. We sample a state x from pi, and then we sample a transition, as described in the previous slide. We select an action, we go to the next state y, we use that transition, we use that information, and we do a temporal difference update. Okay, to me, that algorithm comes pretty close to ideas that were around before TD. Okay, so to me, what really distinguishes TD is that TD follows these steps, where you don't initialize with a distribution. You initialize with some state, an arbitrary state, let's say, y. you sample a state x just by setting x to y. And then you sample a transition, x going to y, right? And then for the next sample state, x, again, you just take y to be your next state. Okay, so the difference here is that sample value iteration at each iteration generates a new sample x from the distribution pi, whereas td generates a new sample that was given by the previous transition. Okay, is that clear? All right, so to me that distinguishes TD. Okay, so with that background, let me move on to the point of this talk. I call what TD does trajectory sampling, right? Because the states are sampled by taking a trajectory through the Markov process. As opposed to in comparing this to sample value iteration, what we find is that this feature is important for convergence, and it's important for performance, and as we'll see, it's important in other ways. Okay, so let's talk about convergence first. And this result is for the single policy case. So this result is where we don't really have a control problem, but just a Markov chain. Okay? So you can apply TD to a Markov chain, and you can apply sample value iteration to a Markov chain. And when you apply sample value iteration to a Markov chain, you find that sample value iteration can explode. Right, the parameter vector R can explode. And there were multiple people in the NIPT community who sort of realized this at the same time. I was one of them. And when I realized this, I put together a simple example and emailed it to Rich. And Rich emailed me back saying, that's not fair. This is not TD. TD samples along trajectories. What you have here is a different algorithm. And then I emailed him saying, well, do you think we could come up with a similar counterexample for TD? And he said, well, my wife is really good with Markov chains. And she worked for a long time trying to come up with a counterexample to this, and she wasn't able to. So with that challenge, I worked and worked on trying to come up with a counterexample where even if you sampled long trajectories, things would explode. But I wasn't able to do that. And in the process, I found that there are a number of ideas in the literature actually that hadn't quite created a clean story about TD convergence, but that sort of pointed to convergence. Like Rich had a paper on that, Peter Diane had a paper on that, and others. And so in this process of trying to come up with a counterexample, I sort of put this all together and tried to come up with a story. About TD convergence. And the bottom line is that TD does converge in this context, even though sample value iteration does not. And here's how I think about what happens and what distinguishes the two algorithms. Suppose this is an abstract illustration of the space of value functions. Okay, J star, the optimal value function, lies somewhere in that space. Okay, it's that yellow dot labeled J star. Suppose we start off with some approximation J tilde R to J star. Well, you can show that. You can show that. If you apply, a dynamic programming operator to J tilde R, you get a contraction towards J star with respect to a weighted Euclidean norm. Okay, and the weights on this Euclidean norm are given by the steady state probabilities of the Markov chain. Okay. Now TD, you know, in some sense can be thought of as a stochastic approximation algorithm that combines two things. One is application of the dynamic programming operator. So that brings the approximation J tilde R inside this ellipse. Okay, sorry, this ellipse represents all points the same distance from J star as J tilde R with respect to the weighted Euclidean norm. Okay, so TD combines two things. One is an application of the dynamic programming operator, right, which brings J tilde R inside the ellipse. Okay, and the second thing is a projection back onto the subspace spanned by the basis functions. Okay, I forgot to mention that. This white line represents the subspace spanned by the basis functions. Okay, so we combine those two things. Now when you project back onto the subspace spanned by basis functions, you need a certain norm to define the projection. And it turns out that the norm is a weighted Euclidean norm given by with weights given by the sampling distribution. Okay, so in TD the sampling is generated along trajectories, and as such the sampling distribution, right, is the same as the distribution of states of the Markov chain, which define the first ellipse, and as such. When I project back onto that white line, what I do is I draw the smallest ellipse similar to the first, send it around that dot that touches the white line. Okay, and what you can see there is that because the two ellipses are similar, you know, after applying the dynamic programming operator to J tilde R, you go inside the first ellipse. After projecting, you end up back on the white line where that second ellipse touches the white line, and that's closer to J star than where you started. Okay, so this was sort of the heart of the proof that TD converges. Now, what happens with sampled value iteration? Well, in sampled value iteration, you know, the dynamic programming operator is no different from before. It's the same dynamic programming operator. So you end up inside the first ellipse. And then when you project, you use an arbitrary sampling distribution, this distribution pi, right? And as such, you can end up outside the first ellipse. And you actually end up further away from J star than when you started. Okay, so this was an argument that tried to illustrate why TD converges for Markov chain when sampled value iteration does not. All right? Okay, any questions about that? Yeah.
Geometric insight. I've never seen anything like that before.
Is that true? You never read my paper? Is that true? Oh, okay. It's in my thesis. I guess I didn't do it in time for my paper. Good. Thank you. Any questions? So the upshot of that is that this notion of sampling along trajectories seems to be important for convergence. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is how sampling along trajectories is important for performance. Now, to talk about performance, you can't be talking about Markov chains, right? Because there's no control there. You've got to be talking about a Markov decision problem. Okay, so let's talk about why I think trajectory sampling is important for performance. Okay, so the setup I'm going to use is the following. We have a general discounted MDP, okay? And we're going to approximate the value function using basis functions that are indicator functions. Okay, and these indicator functions are going to be indicator functions over disjoint sets, and we'll make them exhaustive. So one way to think about that is I take the state space represented by the gray oval there, and I partition it. And for each partition, I define an indicator function, right? And those indicator functions serve as my basis. Okay? Okay, and I'll assume that sampled value iteration samples every state. So that this distribution pi from which we sample states assigns some positive probability to every state. Okay. Otherwise, actually, I don't really need that assumption. The assumption, the real requirement is that you sample every partition. Otherwise, things don't make sense. If you don't sample some partition, nothing happens to the weight of that basis function. Okay, so before talking about how trajectory sampling is important for performance here, let me briefly discuss convergence. So in this context, sampled value iteration is guaranteed to converge. Okay, so this is a nice context to study both algorithms because sampled value iteration converges. Does TD converge? I think so, but nobody's been able to prove this. I think to prove it, you need to add some exploration because without exploration, TD may not even have a fixed point for this problem. Okay, so you can come up with examples where there's no fixed point for TD here. But if you add a little bit of exploration, there is a fixed point. And whether TD converges is open. Okay, let's talk about performance. So since we don't know whether TD converges, we'll just look at the fixed points generated by both algorithms and compare the policies we get from them, the greedy policies we get from them. Okay, and how do we want to compare? Well, you could compare whole value functions, but sort of to actually simplify, and there are more complicated results about value functions. I want to present sort of simplified results here. And in order to do that, what I want to do is compare performance in terms of average reward. Okay. So given, let's say, the optimal value function J star, right? You take the greedy policy with respect to that. Okay, that's a policy, and we're going to take that policy and we're going to measure average reward. Okay, so we'll call that average reward lambda star alpha. It depends on state X because average reward may be different depending on what state you start at. Okay, but note that this isn't the optimal average reward because we optimize a discounted problem, and then we're measuring the average reward. However, if alpha is close to 1, this should approach the optimal average reward. Okay? And we do the same with an approximate policy. Given an approximate value function J tilde R, I can compute the average reward of that, okay, lambda tilde alpha x, okay? And so I'm going to compare these quantities in order to measure performance of an algorithm. Okay, lambda star alpha x should generally be bigger than lambda tilde alpha x, especially when alpha is large. Is that clear?
Is there an arbitrary r?
So you could do this for any r. So given an approximate value function, this is how I'm going to measure its performance. Okay, so for each R, you'll get a different performance.
Any approximate.
Yeah, so lambda tilde alpha here should be parameterized by R, although I didn't make that explicit. Okay. Okay, so for TD, you could prove the following kind of result, which is the difference between the average reward from the optimal policy and the average reward from the TD fixed point is bounded by twice the minimum over all weight vectors R of the maximum norm between J star and J tilde R. Okay, so if we tried to figure out the best approximation with respect to the maximum norm, you'd minimize that quantity on the right-hand side. Okay, you get a certain approximation error, and the performance gap or the performance loss from using the greedy policy with respect to a TD fixed point is at most twice that. Okay. Why do I have the less than or equal to sign in quotes? Well, for this specific result, it's only true in the asymptotic regime of large alpha close to 1. Okay. There are more complicated results that are similar that are true for arbitrary alpha. Looks like you have a question.
Now it doesn't make sense that R is in the first set of equations is a free variable.
It's in the representation class of TD, something that must be tiny.
Because this is the same thing with lambda tilde could be an arbitrarily bad thing, because your J.
Good. Okay, so So some of what I said is not in the slide, so let me repeat that. Lambda tilde alpha here, in this result, I didn't put down the words, lambda tilde alpha is the average reward from the greedy policy given by a TD fixed point. Okay, so this is a performance of the TD fixed point. This R is just a dummy variable. Well, whatever's producing that level of reward is a TD fixed point. Okay.
So it's all in null. It's within a factor of 2.
That's right. That's right. Well, there's a minimal error on the right hand side there. Okay. So that's the result for the TD fixed point, right? This is what you get if you run TD and you converge. Okay. Now let's compare that to sample value iteration. Okay, so for sample value iteration, you could try to write down a similar result, right? But there's no constant. There was a constant of 2 in the previous result. And for sample value iteration, there's no constant for which that inequality will be satisfied. So the constant would have to be infinite. And the reason is that constant really scales with 1 over 1 minus alpha.
Okay. Yeah? What is the sampling distribution for sampling value iteration here?
Okay, good. So the point here is there exists, well, this is like a worst case thing. Okay, yeah, this is the worst case. Because if you use, if you use the same distribution as TD is using, right, then you have TD and you have the previous result, right? So there exists a distribution that will give you the TD fixed point, presumably, but if you use some arbitrary distribution, you could get, you can't have a bound where you get a constant multiplied by that minimum over R. Yep.
When the divergence between the TD distribution and the distribution used in SVI would play a role in the bond?
No, I haven't worked on that.
Something like that.
Could be interesting to see what drives that. Yeah.
And that is for the batch mode case.
So I think the batch mode. I described the simple TD algorithm, but I think that the insights here apply to many cases. And batch mode, I think, would satisfy the same kinds of results. Yeah. So by batch mode, I assume you simulate for a long time, and then you collect this. Oh, don't do any sampling. That's like this. Yeah. But you're approximating.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to approximate, right? We have this we're projecting onto a linear combination of basis functions. So the batch mode version of sample value iteration, right, is where you compute the, you know, you apply the dynamic programming operator to compute the value at each state, and then you project that using some projection norm onto the spanner basis functions. Right? That's the batch mode version of SVI, and that would suffer from the same issues. Good. Okay, so the quotes mean that this is true in the asymptotic regime as alpha approaches 1. Okay, and the reason for stating the results this way is the results that apply to arbitrary alpha are more complicated. So you can look those up in my paper, but I didn't want to write those down on the slides. Yeah?
Is there a d lambda over 1 minus alpha on the right hand side of the first temporary as well?
Is
there a d lambda over 1 minus alpha factor? So the value functions guess is 1 over 1 minus alpha.
Ah, but both. So J star.
There's a difference between the two, right?
So J star scales with 1 over 1 minus alpha, right? But that's only the constant part, right? There's sort of a constant part plus a differential value. The constant part scales with 1 over 1 minus alpha. Now, constants are within the span of J tilde R. So when you take the minimum over R, you cancel out that constant part. You know, so the right-hand side is not generally going to be order 1 over 1 minus alpha. Okay. All right. Any other questions? How much time do I have? Okay. Good. Okay. So the upshot of this result is that trajectory sampling seems to matter a lot to the performance of the policy you get out of the algorithm. Okay. And actually, you know, the result makes it look deep and all that, but it's actually quite a simple thing going on. Okay. So let me illustrate what's going on through an example. Okay, so let's consider this MDP, okay, with potentially lots of states. And I'm going to divide the states into two sets, odd states and even states. Okay? And all the odd states, all the odd states except for state 1, you know, go to state 1. Okay. State 1 is an absorbing state. Okay. All the even states except for state 2 go to state 2. And state 2 is the only state where we have to make a decision. We can take the green decision and go to state 1, or take the red decision and stay in state 2. Okay. This is all deterministic. Okay. So if I apply TD to this, something too trivial happens. So in order to make it a little more interesting, I'm going to make it a little random. I'm going to have a reset probability epsilon 1. Okay. So at each time, there's a probability epsilon 1 that instead of transitioning according to this diagram here, you go to a random state, uniformly sampled among all states. Okay. The reset. I'm also going to add a transition from state 1 to state 2. So instead of having state 1 be absorbing, there's a probability epsilon 2 that you'll go to state 2. Okay. So this way, instead of being stuck in an absorbing state and not having to make any more decisions, you keep going back to state 2 occasionally and having to make that decision between red and green. Okay? So this is to make the problem, the outcome non-trivial. All right, so that's the structure of the MDP. Let me talk about the rewards. Okay, I got rid of the white just to get rid of some clutter, but this is still going to be that randomized problem I just mentioned. Okay, so as far as rewards are concerned, for states 4 to 10, for all the even states except state 2, Right? On the transition to state two, you get some reward delta. Okay. For all these odd states, on transition to state one, you get a reward negative delta. Okay. State one is an absorbing state, and the cost or the reward for that you get for staying there is zero. So it just absorbs, and you get zero reward from then on. Well, actually, it's not an absorbing state. There is some probability of going to state two, as I mentioned earlier. But if you go from state one to state one, you get zero. Go from state one to state two, you get zero. Okay. For state two, right, we have to make a decision. Either go to state one or stay in state two. If we go to state one, we get no reward. And if we stay in state two, we incur a cost of C. All right? Okay, and then we're going to approximate the value function for this problem. All right, first of all, is the problem clear? Any questions about what the problem is?
The only hint you didn't say is epsilon 1, you might go to a reset. What's the cost on that?
No cost.
Zero cost.
Yes, everything, all the costs that aren't specified here are zero. All right, so I want to approximate the value function for this problem, right? And I'm going to do that by using these two partitions. So one basis function is going to be the indicator function for odd states. One basis function is going to be the indicator function for even states. Just two basis functions. Right? Okay, so the problem was carefully designed so that the minimal error is small. So notice that, you know, delta is a small number, right? And so the difference in value between the odd states is very small, right? State one is only better than state three by an amount delta. And similarly for the even problem, even states, state two, or state four is better than state two only by an amount delta, right? So in each of these partitions, J star should only vary by delta. Okay, so these indicator functions provide good approximations. All right, so what happens with sample value iteration? Let me assume that sample value iteration is going to sample states uniformly, you know, over the whole MDP. Well, what happens there is you end up with a low value for this partition and a high value for that one. Why is that? Well, you sample states randomly here, and let's say there's lots of states, not just nine. What sample value iteration will usually see is a transition that goes to state one with a reward of negative delta. Okay? So the value of this partition becomes something like delta over negative delta over 1 minus alpha, something like that. Okay. Similarly, with the right partition, what sample value iteration will usually see is a transition to state 2 with reward delta. So the value there becomes something like delta over 1 minus alpha. All right, so you have a low value here and a high value here. What does that mean when you have to make this decision at state 2? What that means is, it says we're going to incur a cost of negative C. However, state one looks really bad. So let's swallow that cost and stay in state two. Okay? And so you incur an average cost of C. Right? And that's not good. You'd rather go to state one and generally get cost of zero. And what happens with TD? Well, TD is the opposite. Right? It gives you a high value here and a low value there. Right? And the reason is that, you know, if you start making this decision, if you start taking the red action at state two, it'll spend a lot of time at state two. Right? And because it spends a lot of time at state two, it'll, you know, lower the value of the right partition, and that will they'll move towards negative C over 1 minus alpha. And negative C over 1 minus alpha is going to look much worse than negative delta over 1 minus alpha. Okay, so eventually it's going to learn to try to get to state 1. Okay. So in this example, TD will learn that it wants to go to state 1. All right? And that's what's happening. Any questions about that? Is it clear? Yeah.
Is it that sampling value iteration is not going through the rare path in this trajectory, and TD goes through these narrow rare paths every once in a while? Or?
Well, I think it's the opposite. I think it's that TD focuses on the paths that are frequent and that matter a lot. Where sample value iteration is just randomly looking all over the place. And so it may do things that are important for states that we're rarely going to see. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. Pardon? It converges. There is a quality of convergence kind of result, and essentially what it is is that it's the same as that result up there, but with a factor of 1/1 minus alpha in front. Okay, so that's why you can't have a constant there that applies to all alpha. So TD is removing a factor of 1/1 minus alpha. Okay, so then the remaining time, which is what, like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to talk about why I think that intuitively, I think we all believe this, but I want to talk about some formal results trying to express ways in which TD is not just a heuristic search algorithm. And I want to talk about this in the context of a specific class of problems, optimal stopping problems. And, this is kind of a narrow class of MDPs. However, it's a interesting class of problems in that it's a case where TD has received real application. I'm not sure if I could say ubiquitous, but it's a case where TD is used by lots of people. In particular, it's a really common tool among financial institutions. At almost any financial institution you go to, you'll find a handful of people that use this kind of an algorithm. And not all of them will be PhDs. You'll even find MBAs that are using this. Okay. I think this is the only area where a TD-type algorithm is used that widely. Okay, so let me talk about the origins of it, of this idea. John Sisiklis and I published a paper in NIPS in 1996 on using TD in this context, and in particular on a TD0 algorithm, and we had some theoretical results about that. It didn't attract a whole lot of interest from the NIPS community because optimal stopping problems are really quite a narrow class of MDPs. However, shortly after that, I did a project with Morgan Stanley where I implemented some software for them because they had these problems to solve, and they used that software. But that seemed like the end of this research trajectory until... In 2001, these two guys, who are prominent people in finance, published a paper. They didn't know about our paper in NIPS, or TD0 paper. And and they didn't even know about TD. But what their paper essentially is TD1 applied to optimal stopping problems. All right. And this paper was circulated widely in the finance industry. And it's a nicely written paper, and it even explained how to do this in Excel, which I think was important. And these guys also published another paper that was interesting, titled Throwing Away $1 Billion. That was the heading, that was the leading title. And what they did there was, almost every financial institution subscribes to the Bloomberg service. And the Bloomberg service offers data and also offers some computational tools. And one of their computational tools gives you tips on when to exercise swaptions. So swaptions are options on swaps. And you've probably heard of credit default swaps by now. But anyway, these are options on swaps. And they were becoming popular about at that time. And this computational tool included in Bloomberg told you how to exercise them. So what these guys did was tried this TD1 type algorithm on the same problem and showed that you get better exercise policies and sort of aggregated all the swaps being exercised in the whole industry and estimated the value being lost because people were using the Bloomberg system instead of this TD1 type thing. And their estimates in excess of $1 billion. So that was a cute paper. So with those guys promoting this idea, it reached every financial institution, and this is now used widely. So let me get back to the analytics. These ideas apply to very broadly to all sorts of optimal stopping problems, but to have a simple context, let's focus on a case where we have an ergodic Markov process, and we get some reward when we stop. Okay, so there's the reward when we stop the process is a function of the state we're in. Okay, and that's the only reward we ever get. So we see this Markov process chugging along, and we can decide when to stop it. So the Bellman's equation for this problem takes this form here. So J star x is the value at state x, and that's the maximum between the value we get for stopping, which is this payoff, g of x, and the continuation value, which is alpha times the expected value of the next state. Okay? That's the Bellman equation for this problem. For our algorithms, it turns out to be more convenient to work with continuation values. They're analogs to q values. And you can think of it as the value function, assuming that we continue for one time step. Okay, so if we continue for one time step, we get alpha times the expectation of the reward we'd get for the maximum between the reward we get for stopping and the value at the next state. Okay? All right, so suppose we want to approximate Q star using a linear combination of basis functions. So let's say we didn't know TD. Let's ask how we might do that. Well, one approach is to try to design an optimization algorithm that just chooses the parameter vector R to optimize performance. Right? Well, how do we define performance? We need to define performance in order to do this. Let's define it as... So let's say J mu is the value function for the policy we end up with, okay? Let's define performance as the expectation of that value function taken with respect to the stationary distribution of the Markov chain. Okay, that seems like a natural definition of what we want to optimize. Okay, so let's say that's performance. Okay, so we want to find the linear combination of basis functions that gives us the policy that optimizes this performance metric, right, among all greedy policies with respect to linear combinations of basis functions. Okay. So let's think about how hard that problem is. All right. So you could imagine applying policy gradient to that problem, or you know, something like that. Right. This is just trying to optimize performance. I don't care if I'm getting a good approximation of the value function. I just want to choose the R vector that optimizes performance. Okay. So let's start by considering how hard this is to do on really simple problems. Suppose we don't have very many states. Suppose we have an exhaustive state representation, you know, where we have n states in our Markov process. Okay. That's an optimal stopping problem where we could solve the problem exactly, easily, right? In polynomial time, polynomial in the number of states. Right? Okay, so a problem with a reasonable number of states that we can solve exactly. Okay, so even if we take such a problem, computing the optimal vector R is NP hard. Not only is NP hard, but it's NP hard in the strong sense. And not only is it NP hard in the strong sense, but it's NP hard in the strong sense, even to approximate within a logarithmic factor. Okay. So you can't design, unless it's P equals NP, you can't design any algorithm that comes up with any reasonable approximation to the parameter vector R that optimizes performance. Right? It's a really, really hard problem. Okay. So given if we're discouraged by that, we might decide on doing some sort of approximate DP. Right? In particular, we might try to approximate the optimal value function Q star. Right? So forget coming up with best policy in this parameter class. Let's just approximate the optimal value function Q star. And we may say that as our goal, minimizing root mean squared error for the Q function. Okay, so we might set as our goal choosing a parameter vector R that gets us as close as possible to Q star in terms of root mean squared error. It's weighted root mean squared error, weighted by the steady state probabilities of the Markov process. Okay. Now, one thing that suggests that this isn't a bad idea is that you can bound the performance of a greedy policy. So if you get an approximation Q tilde to Q star, you can bound the performance of a greedy policy mu, right? So this is the optimal performance. This is the performance of the greedy policy we get. Well, that's bounded by 1 over 1 minus alpha times the minimal error between Q star and Q tilde. Okay, so what this says is if you chose good basis functions, if you chose basis functions that allow you to get a good approximation to Q star, then you'll get a good policy by minimizing squared error. Okay? So it's a good motivation for minimizing squared error. Problem is, I don't know how to minimize squared error. Right? We don't have samples of Q star. Right? If we knew Q star, we'd have the optimal policy. Q star is the optimal value function. So as such, you ask, how do we get Q star? Well, I don't know. And actually, I think that you can generate information-based complexity arguments that show that for high-dimensional problems, even under lots of regularity conditions, you won't be able to do this efficiently. Okay, so if we can't approximate Q star, what to do? Well, how about if we just run TD? Okay, so you can come up with a variation of TD for this problem, which is what we did. You have this simulated trajectory. We have a definition of a temporal difference, and we have this weight update equation. And the convergence story for this algorithm is similar to the one, you know, where we only have a single policy, right? TD converges, and if you tried sampled value iteration in this problem, it wouldn't converge. What else can we say about TD in this context? Well, it turns out that if you run TD, we know it converges, so you'll get to a fixed point. If you take the fixed point and take the greedy policy with respect to that fixed point, you get that error bound there. Okay, so again, we get performance close to optimal if the basis functions are good. Now, it's interesting to compare this performance with what we'd get from minimizing root mean squared error, right, which is something we don't know how to do. If we minimize root mean squared error, this is the bound I showed earlier, the one we get on the bottom here. So the two bounds only differ by a factor of 2.17. All right? So the bottom line here is that TD here is competitive with minimizing root mean squared error. Okay. And by the way, the 2.17 is a number that works for all alpha. If alpha is close to 1, you get something smaller, like 1.8 or something. Okay. All right, any questions about that? All right. So the upshot there, I think, is that you know it would have been difficult to design sort of a general optimization algorithm to find a good weight vector R that leads to good performance. Very difficult, and you know intractable in a very deep way. But somehow, you know, TD does something that's competitive with minimizing RMS error, which seems like a reasonable proxy, and is something we don't know how to do. Yeah. This is TD0. Yeah. I've tried analyzing TD1 for this, and there's no such bound. What's funny is in the finance industry, a lot of people who apply this are either applying TD0 or TD1. And don't know that there's a difference between the two. They think they're doing the same thing. Yeah.
You mentioned before computational complexity. So one wonders about like what's the complexity to obtain the TD solution.
I didn't get that.
What is the complexity to obtain the TD solution? So rate or
what's the complexity to obtain the TD solution?
Yeah.
Okay. So well, okay. So I think that that's a good question. And I don't think there's any rigorous analysis of this yet. I think that if you apply straight TD the way I did, it depends on some problem data. And so it can be arbitrarily bad. But if you apply, say, the types of algorithms Dimitri was presenting, you can probably prove something like polynomial time, something like that. Yeah.
Is the finite horizon version of this problem interesting to people in the industry, and what can you say about that?
Good. Okay, so let me save that for two slides from now, but I'll come back to that, okay?
And you should wrap up.
Okay. Okay, so I am wrapping up. So, okay, so... Oops. I meant to be wrapping up. Okay, so I think we've shown these things. Okay, so the main ideas here I think of as insights rather than specific results. And I think the insights I mentioned generalize in many ways. So, for example, they apply to faster versions of TD, like for example, what Dimitri talked about earlier today. Algorithms that work in the same spirit but are designed to converge faster. They also apply to cases where you want to use Q values or post-decision states, like what Warren was talking about. And they also apply to other MDP formulations, like finite horizon problems. In fact, to answer Dimitri's question, in finance, people only solve the finite horizon version of that problem. Now, when you have a finite horizon, convergence is trivial. You always converge, right? But what do our convergence results say? Well, it's not so our results shouldn't be thought of as just convergence results, but we can ask what the insights imply about finite horizon problems. And when you have convergence results with infinite horizon problems, they usually say something about how the error in a finite horizon problem grows with the length of the horizon. Okay, so that's really where they come in. And apply to average cost formulations. I close by saying, after all these years, I still feel like I don't understand TD. It's really a mystery. There are problems I've applied TD to where it's the only thing I can get to work well. Okay? There are problems I apply TD to where I can't get it to work at all. Everything. TD lambda. And so I feel like we don't understand TD. So I feel like there's some interesting insights there, but we may have to work on the algorithm some more to understand exactly what to do. And I wanted to bring up this intriguing example, which is from a paper by Dmitry Bertsakis and Sergei Ayofi. And it's from their successful application of TD to Tetris. And what this graph plots is, you know, they run TD, a variation of TD on Tetris, and once in a while they test it on a bunch of games. And this shows the performance as a function of how long they run TD for. Okay, so the performance improves a lot over time, and then starts diminishing, and it dies out over time. And so the Tetris player they produced was, you know, by remembering what weights they generated along the way, and taking the weights that worked best along this time axis. Right? I find something dissatisfying about this. Right? The performance should, if we have the algorithm set up right, performance should just keep improving. Right? We don't know what's going on. So we still don't know what's going on. And I think there's some insight lurking here which would be really interesting to figure out. We don't understand yet, but has to do with this interplay. So in TD, we're evolving an approximation. That approximation generates the policy we're using. That policy changes the trajectory we're sampling from, changes the distribution we're sampling from, and so we go in this cycle. Right? And there's some complex interaction here that I feel like we don't really understand yet, and it would be nice to understand. Okay, so that's it.
Lots of reflections during